This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. Create your own space today by visiting squarespace.com and use offer code TREK9 to save 10%. And also by TrekFan, where you'll explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. Put your love for Trek into action by visiting TrekFan.org and help us move the world one step closer to the Star Trek future. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our new alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
I'm Jeff Combs. I'm everywhere on Star Trek, and you keep tuning in to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 111, Bird of Prey Selfies. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Philip Gilfus. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including the trailer for the feature-length Unification, Dayton Ward's Paramount-inspired book release, and the mysterious Star Trek Terran. We also remember A.C. Crispin and answer more questions from the fleet. Then in the feature, we're joined by Darren Moser and Daniel Prue to discuss the TNG episode, A Matter of Honor. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Philip. It's great to have you with me this week for your very first time sitting in the co-hosting chair on The Ready Room. How's your weekend been going over there in North Carolina?
It's been going great here, Chris, trying to survive the southern heat down here in North Carolina. So keeping things cool, trying to stay in the air conditioning where I can, and been busy doing some real life work, you know, that real life that gets in the way of quality Star Trek time. But luckily I'm here now in the Ready Room and ready to talk about real Star Trek stuff and leave that boring real life behind.
Okay, that's good, because when you're in the Ready Room, Star Trek is real life. So let's just go ahead and jump into our news. We have a few items this week. And the first one, of course, we would just be completely remiss if we didn't mention this as we are recording this show. For you in the U.S., on the night of September 8th, something really big happened on September 8th a long time ago, 47 years ago, in fact, and that was the night that The Man Trap premiered on television and Star Trek was born officially. And, you know, since then, we've never looked at science fiction or sought quite the same way again, Philip.
That's true. That's true. And I think everyone learned a valuable lesson about dealing with exes, that they're not who they appear to be. You should always be cautious. So it's a vital lesson from Star Trek coming right out of the gate there those decades ago.
Really, yeah. Don't mess with them. And I was disappointed. I think they should do this actually for the 47th anniversary of Star Trek, or at least for the 50th. Okay, they need time to print the packaging and all. I think that Martin Salt, they should replace the girl with the umbrella with the Salt Vampire.
That's true. That's true. That would be a great idea. And I think, depending on which store you go to, the salt might have a different flavor and might be a different version of the Salt Vampire. So I think that, because you would see a different vision. Some would see the Salt Vampire, some would see the young blonde girl, some would see the McCoy's ex. So yeah, I think that'd be a great idea.
I love it. Okay, get on that, guys. I'm expecting to see that in the supermarket in a couple of years.
Now, Chris, if you have your big birthday cake for Star Trek, the original series, don't forget to also have your smaller birthday cake for Star Trek, the animated series, which is also celebrating its birthday today.
That's right. In fact, it is the 40th anniversary, I believe. Is that right? Of Star Trek, the animated series?
That's right. 1973 on a Saturday morning, little children got to wake up and see the adventures of the Starship Enterprise with all the original actors, and all the adults turned in and said, what's going on here?
Right. Yeah, I missed TAS when it was on television. I was around, but I don't remember ever watching it. So now I have it on DVD, so I can partake of animated Kirk and all that fun and all the glorious pink that is in that show, because that there's a lot of pink in there. All right. Well, while that is a wonderful, exciting note for Star Trek, we do have a sad note this week as well as we transition to the next story here. And as everyone knows on the Ready Room, we do like to remember those who are involved in Star Trek as they pass away. And this past week, A.C. Crispin, or Anne C. Crispin, she wrote under the name A.C., passed away. She succumbed to a long battle with cancer. And those who enjoy the Star Trek novels will be familiar with her work. She wrote a number of original series novels, Yesterday's Sun, Time for Yesterday, which both centered, they were sequels to All Our Yesterdays, the TOS episode, and they focused on Spock and his relationship with his son. And then she also wrote, I don't know if you've read this, Philip, the TNG novel, The Eyes of the Beholders.
I have not. I have not, but I'm just reading about her obituary in the United States papers. It's obvious that she really loved the Vulcans and writing about Sarek, even in the sort of TNG timeline, not in, in even writing about Spock,
right,
and his son in the TOS timeline. So
right. Yeah, there was the novel Sarek from 1994, which focused on that. And Eyes of the Beholders, you know, I don't remember the details of the novel anymore, but I do remember that I did read it. It came out in 1990, and I still recognize the cover when I see it. And that was, it reminded me just slightly of some of the events that we got in the A Time 2 series for TNG because of the space graveyard and all the ships and such that were there. And that was kind of interesting. So, and then she wrote a comic that also involved Sarek and Spock. That was Star Trek Enter the Wolves in 2001, which she wrote with Howard Weinstein. And an interesting twist there is that the Cardassians are seeking Federation status. And but ultimately, as is always the theme with Spock and Sarek, the father and son have to put their differences aside to save the day. You know, that seems to be the recurring theme.
Yeah, I mean, I think AC's strength as a writer was definitely being a fan first, because she took a lot of these elements, whether it was the original series or the Next Generation, and said, you know, they mentioned this, or there was this character, or there was this dynamic. You know, let's do a jumping point. Let's talk about the Guardian of Forever. Let's talk about Vulcans. And she didn't do that just in the Star Trek universe. She did a sort of quote-unquote prequel to Jack Sparrow in the Pirates of the Caribbean universe, did a prequel for Han Solo in the Star Wars universe. So it's definitely, you can tell from her writings that she was a fan of a lot of great sci-fi out there. And so definitely, if you haven't read any of her books or all of her books, something to pick up.
Most definitely. So she passed away on September 6th. And she, again, it was a long battle with cancer. So she knew that it was coming to an end. And she actually went on her Facebook page on September 3rd to let fans know that, you know, time had run out. And so that's very sad. But she was 63 years old, and she left behind a lot of great fiction for fans of Star Trek and, as Philip said, other franchises, Star Wars and such, to read. So remember her, go pick up some of her books and enjoy the stories. And we thank her for her contributions to Star Trek. Now, Philip, switching gears again, back to something a little more lighthearted. Last week on The Ready Room, Matthew and I went on our rant against Paramount and Bad Robot for the just complete fiasco that is the Star Trek Into Darkness Blu-ray release. Now, our friend Dayton Ward, the prolific Star Trek author, he has adopted Paramount's Blu-ray extra strategy for the release of his next novel. And I think he has a really fantastic idea here, and it may actually show the way for the future of books. What do you think?
I think so, Chris. You know, just like you said last week, where the sort of response or a response was that, you know, the real audience isn't the fans. The real audience is the real retailers. Well, that's true in the book industry as well. So if the fans aren't the customers and the retailers are the customers, I think Dayton had a great idea.
He really did. So Dayton says, most of you know that my next novel will be published on December 31st. The book will feature different bonus chapters and endings depending on whether you buy the book at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of 13 individual independent booksellers scattered all over the world, or eBay. He says, yes, the endings will be different if you opt for the physical book, hardcover, trade paperback, mass market paperback, and or Braille edition, ebook, audiobook, graphic novel adaptation, and or special limited Twitter-fied edition. What else did he have to say about his plan there, Philip?
I think he had some great Taco Bell franchise ideas as well. If you went there, you could probably unwrap, whatever your latest $1 or 99 cents or $2 quote unquote food. I enjoy Taco Bell. You could open that up and you could have a new ending or even maybe a new chapter.
Right. It's kind of like the Into Darkness commentary, which is an enhanced commentary only available through iTunes. In this case, if you want the serialized version of Chapter 22, you will have to go to Taco Bell because it is being printed on the little packets of taco sauce, mild flavor only, of course.
Yes, and the plot just drips out with each packet that you open.
Absolutely. And finally, he says that if you have questions about this, the answers to your questions will be randomly distributed amongst the different versions of the book when it goes on sale in December. So I think Dayton may be a visionary here, Philip. I think this may be the future of print publishing, digital and physical both.
And I loved his idea of authors really connecting with their audiences by putting special comments and remarks in the fortunes in Chinese restaurants where you just open up the cookie. And you'd have Dayton saying, here's my response to that rant you had on my website. I mean, he's a visionary. I think he can thank Paramount. It's one small step for man, one giant leap for author kind.
That's what it is. So this is over. There's a story about this over on 1701news.com and also the original piece on Dayton's blog, The Fog of Ward. And we'll put links to those in the show notes if you want to check it out. But really great idea Dayton has there. I'm ready for it. Maybe we should do that with our podcasts as well.
I think that'd be great. Whether you're listening on Stitcher or iTunes or no matter how you get this podcast, you turn on the Ready Room and you hear Chris and I doing the news. But if you're on another platform, maybe it's Chris and Daniel, or maybe Darren or Kate. You never know.
I think maybe, like the Andorian fight scene is only available in the TuneIn edition.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
And it could be a Enterprise Andorian or an original series Andorian fight scene.
Could be, because both are great. Although the Enterprise Andorians seem to be able to keep their antenna on their head a little bit better than the original series ones do.
That's true. And they're actually Andorians. So,
all right. Well, let's go on to the next story here, Philip. Now, this one is right up your alley as a diehard TNG fan. CBS has released the trailer for the feature-length Blu-ray release of Unification, which is going to drop on November 19th alongside the TNG Season 5 Blu-ray set. Did you have a chance to watch the trailer?
I did. And it was... it was a great trailer. I thought some of the dramatic music may be slightly overdone, but
oh, did you?
But it was a great, but it's a great trailer. Regardless, I mean, because look, Unification is a great two-parter. For fans who are always clamoring for original series guest stars, we had McCoy with Encounter and Farpoint in the very first episode. Even though some people may not have known that was McCoy when they were watching it, we had Scotty with Relics. So he sort of had like, oh, are we ever going to see Kirk? Are we ever going to see? And then Unification comes and here we have Spock.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the music because my take on this trailer was that I felt like they toned things down a bit compared to some of the recent trailers. And this was a more straightforward trailer. Here's a great episode, classic TNG episode. And I felt like it was a trailer made more for Star Trek fans instead of for a broader audience, because the trailers that they've been doing for the season sets, both of TNG and Enterprise, have been getting cheesier with every release. And this one finally felt like they had scraped all the cheese off, and it was just a straightforward, here's Spock, you love this episode, it's going to be available to you on November 19th kind of trailer.
Now, my question is, now that you've brought up the here's Spock part, in this Blu-ray feature, I was looking at the special features, and they have a lot of great stuff, featurettes about moving to the next generation, but I did not see a special feature of where, when you pop in the Blu-ray, you can just press the where Spock starts appearing and starts talking button, where you're just in the last 5 minutes of part one. It just starts automatically from there.
That's probably in there. They don't want to promote that, you know, up front in the press release. They want to surprise you, you know, with a few features. So that's in there. And also there's probably at the very end of the episode, they have some nice dreamy music and they've just cut together only the Spock scenes into like, you know, and not even the entire scenes, but just the best moments from those into like about a 90-second montage. That's probably
yeah,
there
and
as
I think
well.
I really enjoyed seeing that they have the Spock Data sort of a Sarah McLachlan music over them, all their scenes together. It really brought a new. I didn't see that when I first saw the episode, but now that I've seen that clip together, it really brings a lot of light to what could have gone on with those two characters.
Well, I don't think Sarah was so popular back when this first aired, was she?
She was a 90s, right? She was a 90s a musician. Though I did want to point out, Chris, unfortunately to our UK listeners, that this is not available for the UK. I was noticing
that they
were directing our Scots, Brits, and Irish to go to the US, you know, come to my country, go to the US Amazon and order from there. But they said it should work in their players.
Yeah, I noticed that, and I thought that that was very odd, because most of the time this stuff is released in the UK, and when I was checking prices, I always check the US Amazon price, and I always check the UK Amazon price, and yeah, I got there, and it was import, which I'm familiar, of course, with seeing here in Japan as well on Amazon, import versions of discs, but there was no price at all. It was like, you can't even buy the import. They're just, you know, go over to the US store. So that was kind of odd. I don't know if that's going to change as we get closer or not. But currently, anyway, the list price is $24.99. The current Amazon pre-order price is $19.99. I believe that Redemption dropped to $16.99, I think it was, just before release. So that's most likely going to be the price of this disc when it comes out as well. And if you pre-order, you know, they'll give you the lowest price.
I think the interesting part about this is where we're having Unification come out the same time as Season 5. And so, which Unification, again, is a great episode, makes a perfect feature-length Blu-ray, but it does lead to like, well, if I'm buying the Blu-ray with Season 5, and then I guess wait for Season 6 to get the rest of it, you know, I'm not going to say money grab, because like I said, Unification is great on its own, but it is interesting, you know, what other episodes are they going to do that with, sort of not simultaneous but maybe almost simultaneous releases?
Right. Well, they've done it so far with The Best of Both Worlds, with Redemption, now Unification. But the key to these, because that is a great question, the key to these is that they are making some bonus features that are episode specific that are not on the Blu-ray sets. And of course, this doesn't upset me the way that the Into Darkness fiasco does, because this is a unique situation where they're taking these episodes and creating something special for them and making a feature length release. But Unification itself is going to include a new documentary called From One Generation to the Next. And that is a new documentary. There was a similarly named documentary back on the original DVD releases, but this is a new one. And there's also going to be a feature length commentary, which I am sure will not be on the Blu-ray set of the entire season. So you will be getting some extra features there.
And it's sort of ironic that Unification really is the leaping point for the JJ Star Trek movie, because you have the whole setup of Spock and Romulus and all that.
Yeah. And of course, it did a lot to set up episodes in the fourth season of Enterprise as well, with The Forge and Awakening and Kirshara. And it seemed like they were going to play off of that a bit more as you go along in Enterprise if they hadn't been canceled, because you get the Romulan twist at the end of that, where he talks about reunifying our people. Another question this raises is Time's Arrow. Now, I've seen some people say, well, season 5's coming out. Unification is the big feature-length Blu-ray release. Does that mean they're not going to do Time's Arrow? And we've talked about on the Ready Room before, are they going to do this for every two-parter in TNG or only some specific ones? And a lot of fans don't like Time's Arrow. I kind of like it myself. How do you feel about Time's Arrow, Philip?
Chris, I think this is going to be a great feature-length Blu-ray release, because you would sell it in your commemorative Data's head, and you would open it up, and there awesome. You would have your Blu-rays ready to just put in into your whatever system you're using. I mean, it's a great idea. How can you not want to market that? And then if they kind of run out of those real quickly, then the next release can come with your own Mark Twain, Samuel Clement wig. That you can just put on and wear, maybe complete with the mustache.
And the mustache. Yeah, and
yeah,
the mustache.
Of course. Yeah. Oh, no, they're not going to shortchange this. And you can just put that on and watch. And I think it also comes with a false nose that you can put on, too. So, you know, I think it's a great episode, and you can go back in time and watch Data speak French.
I'm going to hold out for the release that comes with the cane with the serpent head on top, because I want to walk around town with that.
Right. That's a great idea. I mean, you know, we may have to try and stop your nefarious evil plan if we do see you having walking around with that, but nevertheless, you will stand out.
It's okay. I call the cane my human enslavinator.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we've been worried about you, Chris, since your rant last week on the Ready Room. I am worried about Chris Into Darkness. I did see you wearing that sort of black trench coat, but I'm hoping, you know, things get better for you.
Yeah, I think they will. So while we're on the topic of Time Zero, though, I think that this doesn't signify to me that they're not going to do a feature-length release of Time Zero, because if you think about The Best of Both Worlds, what they did with that one is they released it even though it bridged over into the following season. So we may get Time Zero alongside season 6 when it drops. And then I don't know what they'll do as they, you know, get through season 6. We've talked about it here before that I'm personally not very interested in having a feature length release of The Gambit, for example, or Descent. You know, neither one of those episodes really excite me.
Well, I've been a bad TNG fan, Chris, because what they've been doing, as many fans know, is when they release these Blu-rays, they actually show these Star Trek episodes in movie theaters, in select movie theaters.
Yeah,
usually it's been a geographical distance, has been a little far, but actually since I've moved in the past month or two, if they do this again, which they have been doing almost every season that they release on Blu-ray for TNG, I'm hoping. So, you know what, Time's Arrow, if that comes to a movie theater near me, I will put on that wig and mustache and false nose and be in the front row.
Make sure you send a photo of that. I have one other question for you. When I went to Amazon to look up the prices for this, you know how Amazon has that thing now where they try to upsell you by recommending that you buy this disc and this disc and this disc together at the same time for a price, which is the exact sum of those products together, instead of it actually being some sort of thing to entice you to do something you might not have otherwise done. Well, they recommended to me that I pre-order Unification, TNG Season 5, and Mary Poppins 50th Anniversary Edition altogether for $173.97. Why Mary Poppins? Like, do they see some kind of connection between Sela and Mary? I don't quite get this.
See, I always imagined that that Mary Poppins is actually Guinan. I think that's what I've always thought. I mean, you know, it was made a little earlier. That. I'm not going to accuse any race issues, but I think, you know, they had to, you know, for studio reasons at the time, had to make her white. But that's Guinan. I'm pretty sure that's Guinan in Mary Poppins, that because she was there during the 19th century in America, and she could have gone to Britain to take care of some kids and then, you know, moved on. And
that makes a lot of sense. And perhaps originally Mary Poppins was going to be a bartender, but Disney felt it just wasn't kid-friendly enough, and so they decided not to go with that.
That's right.
Okay. They both wear hats, so yeah.
It's true. I mean, if you look at what Guinan's wearing in Time's Arrow, you tell me there's a difference.
Maybe that's it. Okay. Thank you, Philip. Now I understand the thought process of Amazon's automated purchase suggestion mechanism.
Yeah, this is actually a JJ Universe Guinan. I just want to point that out.
Okay. All right. Okay, so everyone, pick that up. It's going to be a great release. I'm looking forward to it for sure. And let's move on to our next thing here, Philip. This is Questions from the Fleet. Again, this is our new segment where we take questions from listeners and we answer them here on the show. And this week, Gene Russell of Salt Lake City, Utah, has asked us another question. And this one is, if CBS asked you to pitch the next Star Trek TV series, what would it be? Now, before we give our answers, Philip, Gene says that what he would pitch is Star Trek meets the Twilight Zone, a different cast from somewhere different in the Star Trek universe each week, pure sci-fi and moral dilemma stories. And I'm kind of mixed on his idea. I like the idea of moral dilemma stories. It sounds like he's suggesting mixing the different casts from different series, which a lot of fans talk about. And that's something that I personally have never been interested in. I only like crossovers if they make sense to do them for a legitimate reason in the story. And I don't know, I don't really want a lot of mixing, but I do like the idea of moral dilemma stories.
Well, I think there's two ways you could go with it. I mean, for one, I definitely am on board for hearing Rod Serling do the Star Trek intro. You know, space. I can't do a Rod Serling. But you know.
You are entering the Alpha Quadrant.
The final frontier of the Twilight Zone. And then maybe another way that we could kind of get to his suggestion there is, and I think it's actually been suggested on the Ready Room before, is focus first on Captain Archer, but, you know, he goes into that locked up quarters for Crewman Daniels, presses the wrong button, and suddenly starts leaping around to the different Star Trek series, trying to put right what once went wrong.
Okay. Well, that's like last week's suggestion of the quantum leap connection. Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't know who would play Al in this scenario, whether it would be a holographic Phlox or what, but, you know, it could definitely work.
Yeah, yeah, it could. So if you were going to pitch a series yourself, though, Philip, what would you pitch? What do you want to see, ideally, as the next Star Trek series?
Well, it would definitely be Starfleet Academy with a bunch of 32-year-old actors portraying 17-year-olds, and it would be on the CW. I mean, that's it.
Well, you know, maybe you remember when they were developing Enterprise, that, not the 32-year-old actor part, but that was one of the ideas that was being kicked around that a lot of people were talking about. And I actually wrote an article back then I think I wrote it in 2000, I think it was. And it was called Can Star Trek Be Saved by the Bell? Because that was, you know, that was the idea. I mean, and for me personally, I didn't like the idea because I think that a series that's set at the Academy would just turn into a CW show. Yes, it would just turn into a Melrose Place type show, something like that, that would not be of much interest to the majority of Star Trek fans.
Yeah. Yeah. No, my more serious suggestion. And this is such a hard question. You know, after TNG and Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise, you know, obviously we all want more Star Trek. But you know, and there's always more stories to tell, but you know, how do you say it and not stay, you know, where we were, but not go too crazy. And so I don't have a perfect pitch here, but I'm just trying to think of, it seems to me that TV, at least here in the United States, but I'm sure everywhere too, is sort of changing and that things are much more arc-wise and less episodic. Yeah. And so you really have to have a story to tell nowadays, and look at Breaking Bad and Mad Men and all the shows now. So I'm looking at sort of Babylon 5 and Battlestar Galactica, the new one, as sort of, you know, reference of, you know, we need to have a story in place, whether it's a 5-year story or just an outline, a 7-year. And then from there, maybe instead of just doing this, are we on the Enterprise or are we not on the Enterprise? maybe try and do both. Maybe have a ship, but then maybe have the space station we always go to, and then just have this sort of large cast of characters, which I'll tip my hat to Chris here and say DS9-ish, where you have this large cast of characters.
Yeah.
But that it is still that sort of morality play, which is why I like Star Trek. And then, you know, whether it's the Star Trek Online universe, which is set in the 25th century or whatever, I mean, I feel like you do have to push it forward because it's been, you know, almost a decade and some since we were last in the 24th century. And having talked about the original Star Trek anniversary, you know, from the 60s to the 80s, we went a century. And so from, you know, the late 90s and early noughts to now, we'd have to probably go another century. So I guess I really don't have a great suggestion whether we're on the Enterprise J or just some random ship, but I think it has to have a great arc or multi-arcs, great characters, mm-hmm. and definitely something that has that what television is like now.
And your idea still has the going out to explore element to it as well with the ship. I mean, like you said, maybe we have a station that we go to frequently, but also there's a ship. So I think the question is, do Star Trek fans want the seeking out new worlds again, where they're constantly, you know, uncovering new things? Or do they want something that's a little bit more internal, as television has shifted to a bit? My suggestion, I mean, I think of various different things that I might do with Star Trek, but the thing that interests me the most is taking an element from Deep Space Nine, which was also picked up in Into Darkness, which is Section 31. But not just Section 31, but the idea of the transformation of the Federation. Because what we see towards the end of Deep Space Nine, towards the end of the 24th century, is we see a Federation that is facing a lot of external pressure from different places. And how do you react to that? And it's a great parallel for the world today, where especially the United States is facing a lot of competition from emerging countries, countries that are, I mean, they're not emerging like they've been way down for a long time, but they're really, really growing rapidly, like China and India, for example. And plus there are the threats to security. And then that makes us take certain reactions that we might not otherwise take. And that's where you see the Federation headed towards the end of the 24th century. So instead of maybe jumping way into the future, which many people suggest, I wouldn't mind seeing a series that just picks up right at the end of the TNG DS9 Voyager timeframe. And it explores how the Federation faces challenges and how dark forces within the Federation government, like Admiral Marcus, who we see Into Darkness, or just, you know, Section 31, which we see in Deep Space Nine, and in that time frame, of course, we know that it was around in the Enterprise time frame as well. How do they deal with things? And I think there's a lot of opportunity there to tell new stories, very new stories within the Star Trek universe that still utilize all the familiar framework that fans love, all the races that they love, the technologies that they love, so that it feels fresh and it's not like a rehash. But it's much more complex than Star Trek that we've had in the past. And I think that that would be engaging to both Star Trek fans and a general audience in today's television environment. And I would certainly love to see that, and maybe do it more in the style of current series, where, you know, do 12, 14, 16 episodes in a season instead of doing 24, 26 episodes in a season, and tell like really meaty stories in each episode. I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah, no, that definitely sounds good. I mean, and it would be interesting if we could meet a new species or new race or new organization that was actually better than us. You know, because we've always been faced with enemies, but what if the Federation encountered another species or hegemony that was, you know, sort of their version of the Federation that makes us question who we are by comparison. So mm-hmm. Maybe we're the enemy, but yeah, I could, there's definitely some possibilities there.
Yeah, that would be cool if that happened as well, because we need that self-reflection. That's kind of the point of science fiction and Star Trek in the first place. So I like that too. So there you go. Those are our ideas for a new series. So thank you, Gene, for sending in your question. And for everyone else, please send us your questions about Star Trek to Questions from the Fleet. Go to trek.fm/contact, and you can use that form there. When it asks you who you should direct the message to, from that menu, you can choose the Ready Room Questions from the Fleet. That'll come to us by email, and we will pick some and read them out and answer them on the show. Philip, this leads us to our final news topic today, which is related to Star Trek on television, possibly. This is a message that was sent to us by Richard Lindberg, and he gave us a link to a forum post on IO9 where someone named Charlie Jane Anders asked, "What is Star Trek Terran?" Someone registered the domain names StarTrekTV.com and StarTrekTerran.com a couple of weeks ago, and they've posted a mysterious September date. What's it about? No clue, but a Paramount rep tells us it's nothing to do with the studio. So, first of all, it wouldn't be Paramount. There was some confusion in the replies on this thread, too. CBS owns the television rights to Star Trek. Paramount owns the film rights, for anyone who doesn't know how it got split up a few years ago in the big split of the company. So if it were television, it would be CBS, but I still don't think they're involved either. What do you make of this, Philip?
Well, my first question would be, is this the same rep who said Into Darkness would not be about Khan?
Well, that rep was named J.J. Abrams.
No. Yeah, this certainly is a, if I was a little bit more original series, I would have one eyebrow arched up right now. but I mean, you know, I don't think they're going to sneak a new Star Trek series by us. Suddenly you turn on your TV one day and like, hey, there's a new Star. What did you know about this? You know, no, not in this age. But, you know, there's certainly, I saw some speculation. Maybe it's a new fan series, which there are certainly a lot of good ones out there. And it was a very interesting way for fans to say, hey, we want Star Trek on TV, so we're going to make our own, and hopefully that'll encourage CBS Studios to do their thing. So I don't know. You know, it's always an adventure, and the human adventure is just beginning. So, you know, if anyone knows anything, you know, let us know, and we'd love to know.
Yeah, I did some digging around, searching around the web, and I really couldn't find any information about this other than what was in that forum post and discussion on IO9. What I will say is what you just said, Philip, which is that it's not a new television series coming out from CBS, because first of all, CBS would not do something that looks as amateur as what's been done here. I mean, this is basically someone with the original series typeface typed boldly go period 9/7 in black on a white background and threw it up on a web page. That's not how a studio like CBS operates. And if they did something that was that mysterious, they would at least do it in a more polished way, like they did with a few of the very, very early Into Darkness things, like before the Into Darkness website actually launched, which of course that's Paramount. But my point is they would do it in a more polished way. It's not that. And even if it were, to create a series takes years. You know, they have to plan what the theme of the series is going to be. They have to cast. They have to do art direction, creation, create sets, costumes. There's no way that this would happen behind the scenes with nothing being leaked out, and that suddenly this month it's going to be announced, it's going to be launched on television. So it's not that. It could be a fan series. It could be a fan audio series. There are a number of audio series out there as well. If you go to iTunes, you can find quite a few of them. It could be that. That's my guess, actually, is that it's either a fan TV type series, web series, or it's an audio series. And it's also quite likely that it's an idea that someone has that will actually fizzle out and nothing will come of it, because that happens quite a lot as well. I do like the response from Manchu Candidate on the IO9 site, where he said, "Star Trek Terran is the new space police procedural about a crime-fighting Federation Starfleet officer with a sunglasses fetish who goes anywhere on Terra, mostly involving women in bikinis and based on 20th and early 21st century crimes. Would you watch that show, Philip, if that came on?
Only if he didn't play by the rules.
Okay, well, he's not going to play by the rules. He's probably also going to have red hair. What do you think about that, a ginger captain?
Oh, since the new Doctor and Doctor Who is not ginger, I think it's time at least for a ginger captain on Star Trek. And as long as someone will tell him that he's off the case, but he still goes after, you know, justice. That's all I want.
That's how every episode starts. You're off the case.
Instead of space, the final frontier, it's you're a loose cannon, McCluskey.
That's right. So I don't know. We don't know what this is about either.
This could be collateral damage from the Time Warner CBS Cold War. And maybe some intern at Time Warner is trying to get some money from CBS after their kerfuffle. I think there's actually a neutral zone now or demilitarized zone. I think everything's good now. But still, you know, you never know.
That makes sense to me, too. We always get caught in the middle of that stuff, right? As viewers. The one thing I do know is that if this is a fan who has registered StarTrekTV.com, I don't think they're going to be holding on to that for very long, because I'm pretty sure CBS is going to come and say, wait a minute, that's ours. I'm surprised that CBS doesn't own that domain. The fact that that domain was available for someone to register is a little bit surprising to me, because you would think for intellectual property purposes that the studio would have registered that domain, but apparently not.
Well, if it's anything like the Jags I've seen on Star Trek, there's only like three of them. I think there's three attorneys in all of Star Trek. So hopefully CBS has a few more in-house counsel.
That's true. And they've all had relationships with the captain, right?
They have, except for, because unfortunately I actually did research on this, except for the Jag, the Advocate General of Starfleet, who appeared briefly during the Dr. Bashir, I presume, episode. Yeah. Which I don't know, maybe he had a prior relationship with Sisko. I don't, you know, don't ask, don't tell. But yes, unfortunately, that's been some of the Jags.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eye on this story anyway and see what does come of it as September goes along. All right. Well, that's all we have in news today, Philip. But before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsors for this week's show. And to that end, we want to tell you about our big sponsor, Squarespace. We love Squarespace here at Trek FM. Trek FM is built on Squarespace, and it's the all-in-one platform that combines hosting and content management to make it simple for you to create your own space online. And that could be a blog or your personal website or a portfolio if you're an artist, an online store if you have things to sell. And, you know, if you use something like WordPress, you're accustomed to having to go and get your server space somewhere, and then you download WordPress and you install that. It's not like that with Squarespace. Squarespace is the interface for content management and the hosting at the same time. And, you know, all the features that you need are put there by Squarespace. So you don't have to install plugins. You don't have to worry about updating things and whether it's going to break your site. None of that is a concern at Squarespace. And that's something I love about them. And apart from that, I also love the fact that the tools are really awesome. It makes it very easy for us to build Trek FM as well as many other sites that I build for myself and clients. And they have really fantastic support. They're also very design focused. They really care about design. They have extremely clean templates that allow your content to be the focus of the website, but you can modify those very easily to make the website your own. And best of all of this starts at just $8 per month. Now, another thing that they have that's very useful to help you promote your content is the Connected Accounts feature, which allows you to tie your website in to social media like Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram, Google+. Not only the normal sharing buttons that you see on websites, but you can actually have Squarespace automatically tweet your content out for you. You can share a page directly on Facebook for your website. Philip, how much do you use social media to find the content that you consume online?
Oh, I mean, I think, and you and I, Chris, were having an earlier discussion about how we're sort of, we've cut the cable when it comes to TV. So, I mean, yeah. For my news source, whether it's, you know, hard news, or just entertainment news like Star Trek, it's all on social media. So, you know, if you're putting your content through to Facebook and Twitter. I mean, that's the only way I'm going to find you, and I'm sure that's true for a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, same for me. And doing that takes a lot of time. And so the connected account features of Squarespace save you a lot of time by making it really easy for you to share that information. And another key feature is responsive design, which allows you to create your website once and have it look great on the desktop or on mobile devices. So it doesn't matter how large your screen is or what the orientation is, the website is going to reflow to look perfect on any device size. And that's really important just for making it easy for you to read content, because you know, I read a lot of content on my iPhone, even though I have an iPad, and I don't read websites where the content is difficult for me to read on the iPhone. So the Squarespace sites give you a beautifully formatted site for those who are accessing through devices such as that. And the other thing that's a relatively new feature, which is really fantastic, is commerce. Commerce allows you to set up a store on Squarespace and accept credit cards, handle your shipping, handle your tax calculation and all through Stripe with a very small fee from Stripe for processing credit cards, which is something you'll pay everywhere. No fee to Squarespace. And it's so easy to set up that you can have a store up and running in just a matter of hours. And if you've already got products in your site and you just want to connect the purchase abilities, it's just a matter of minutes you can have things going. Philip, do you have anything that you might want to sell online?
Well, if you're looking at my camera right now, all this Star Trek stuff is not going anywhere. It's glued down to the table. Okay. You can't have any of it.
Right.
You can play with
too
it.
Too bad.
You can't
I wanted it. That Scotty picture you've got up there on the wall.
I found that randomly too. you know, I did buy this one tribble at a yard sale, and now I have a whole bunch of other tribbles that I would love to get rid of. So I was thinking of having my own go on Squarespace and maybe start my tribble site, you know, all colors, all sizes. Some of them I can just throw at you if that's what you prefer in your tribbles. Some of them squeak, but that would probably be the easiest thing for me to sell right now, because my transporter is down. I don't have anywhere else to get rid of them, and they're gumming up all the works around here.
You know, that reminds me, another great feature of Squarespace is the built-in analytics and metrics, so you can see what's being viewed on your site, where people are coming from and such. I have a feeling that the bar for Kronos on your website is going to be down at zero. No Klingons are going to be coming to that website.
Well, on that site, though, I would also have songs from the great Tribble Hunt.
Okay.
And the stories. Oh, the stories, Chris.
So try this for yourself. You're going to love it. You can get a 14-day free trial with no credit card required. You just enter your name and your email address. They'll set you up in a matter of minutes. You'll be building your website, and you have access to all the features of Squarespace for 14 days. And you can import your website from WordPress or other places and see what it's going to look like and see how those tools give you everything that you need to create an exceptional website. And then when you decide to sign up, use our offer code TREK9 to get 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. And if you choose the annual option, you can receive a free custom domain registration as well. So Philip, you know, you can get your tribbleyardsale.com or, you know, whatever you're going to call that site and hook that up absolutely free. It's included in your purchase price. Basic plan is $8 per month, gives you most everything you need. You can get unlimited everything for $16 per month. And for the commerce feature, that's $24 per month. So go check it out. Support Squarespace and support the Ready Room. Go to squarespace.com, use offer code TREK9. And we really thank Squarespace for their support of Trek FM and the Ready Room. One way that TNG showed us the passage of time was to bring together the Federation and Klingons as allies, at least as uneasy ones. It was a great opportunity to delve into cross-cultural issues, and that's what they did when Riker became an exchange student in A Matter of Honor. Today we're going to talk about Captain William Riker of the Klingon vessel, the Pog. And to help us do that, we have three of Trekafilm's biggest TNG fans. We have Daniel Prue, which of course everyone who listens to The Ready Room knows as the sidekick of Commander Flipper. Daniel, welcome back to The Ready Room.
Wow, I got upgraded to sidekick. I didn't even know. That is true, though. I'm often the one that has to go down and give him his fish, his trout, you know. The replicated stuff just isn't good enough for him, so we give him the fresh stuff for sure. How's it going, Chris?
It's going well, thanks. Yeah, that's a good point that people don't realize that that's extra cargo that the Enterprise has to carry around, right, for Cetacean Ops, because the replicated fish just doesn't cut it. They have a whole cargo bay filled with water just full of fish.
Yeah, just for Commander Flipper. But you know what? He's important to the mission, so we're going to do what we have to do.
Yeah, and Daniel and him have been friends right. Since the pilot encounter at SeaWorld. So.
That's right. That's exactly right.
That's right. And also we have with us someone who has been on The Ready Room before, and everyone knows as Dr. Sci-Fi, it's Darren Moser. Hey, Darren.
Hey, Chris. Yeah, I can't imagine what Cetacean Ops would look like when the inertial dampers go offline. That would probably punch a hole in a bulkhead if they slosh that around too much. But no, it's great to be back.
I'd like to see that happen with director Roland Emmerich, because the waves in Cetacean Ops would just be so epic, sloshing back and forth as the ship was coming to its demise.
Well, and hopefully, I believe Cetacean Ops is in the saucer section, because when the Enterprise eventually goes down, it'd be really sad to leave them on the battle section.
That's where they keep the minnows. We want to make sure that the minnows and the children could escape in the saucer section.
Which makes me wonder, is there a battle Cetacean Ops? Do they ever actually move the Cetacean officers to a battle situation with cool red lighting?
That's how would Commander Flipper get from regular Cetacean Ops to battle Cetacean Ops? Like, would he be bouncing down the corridor? I guess they would.
You have water turbolifts, you know, just conduits of water.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah,
you know, take a page from what was that?
SeaQuest.
This is why on JJ's Enterprise they have those water tubes running through engineering, so that they can transport the Cetacean officers around the ship.
And I thought it was just because they, you know, just took an existing location, but that makes way more sense.
Wait a second. This brings up a really big problem. If those tubes are for Commander Flipper, what are those turbines for?
For turning him into sushi.
Oh, man. All right. And Darren, I noticed that your screen name today is Darren Four Pips. Now, some people might think that you're referring to yourself as a captain, but actually the Four Pips was the most popular Four Tops cover band of the 24th century, who frequently performed in Ten Forward.
You got me. I'm really secretly a Four Pips fan. I have all of their posters, and William the Beard Riker signed his trombone solo album for me, so it was very special.
And I believe there was a spinoff younger group that Harry Kim was a big fan of called the Two Pips, and he was just always listening to the Two Pips, you know,
because he was aspiring that one day he might get a second pip of his own.
He sent him a demo subspace communication with his Into the Abyss enchanting piece on the clarinet. You know, it took, 75 years to get there, but strangely enough, the band was still around.
And it had the cover art for the album, but it had Harry with his blindfold on.
Poor Harry. He tried so hard.
Well, we're not going to talk about Voyager today. We're going to talk about The Next Generation. We're going to talk about A Matter of Honor. And this is an interesting episode for me to go back and watch, because the Klingons were developed so extensively by The Next Generation, and then even further by Deep Space Nine. And then even when we saw Klingons in Enterprise, they were a lot more like the DS9 late TNG Klingons that we were familiar with. So when we go back to this episode, which is the 8th episode of the 2nd season and the 3rd of 30 appearances by the Klingons in TNG, you still feel like they're just getting started on taking the Klingons from the original series and the TOS movies and starting to do something with them. And of course, at this point, I guess Star Trek V had come out, but not six, of course. And of course, in five, we get Claw, Captain Claw, who looks like he was a band member with Twisted Sister who wandered onto the set of a Star Trek film. But anyway, when I watched this episode, though, the Klingons feel really, really different. Really almost like proto-modern Klingons here. What did you guys make of the Klingons in this episode? How about Darren? Why don't you kick us off with this?
Well, one of the things that I enjoyed in this episode is they, besides the captain, which usually when we're meeting a Klingon, it's the captain with Captain Klang. Lieutenant Klang. They all have Ks, so it gets really confusing when you put them all together. But I really liked the Lieutenant Klang character, who is played by Brian Thompson, who has a couple other great roles in the Star Trek universe. Sometimes he's a Romulan, sometimes a Jem'Hadar, but we first met him in this episode as Lieutenant Klang, Riker's second, who is charged with killing him if he performs dishonorably. And that was one of the things I really enjoyed about the episode, is that we saw not necessarily the everyman Klingon, but the mid-rank Klingon who sits in the officer's mess and has opinions and has a father that he's not proud of. And that was a very unique take on the Klingon culture. And I think taught us so much more than, you know, we've been to the High Council, we've seen the leaders, but to see a midshipman, as it were, I think that's what really gave a new dimension to Klingons in this episode.
When you brought up the captain, though, this is just my brain maybe, but all I can think of is Captain Packled, because he was the main Packled up from Samaritan Snare, and his voice the whole time I'm just thinking, wow, this is a dumb captain because he's Packled.
Well, when I was watching the episode today, there's that moment when he is placed on the Enterprise bridge and the lighting is so different. I almost thought that they had just kind of grabbed an extra and put him in the makeup. And I'm like, is that the same person? Because he looks so different when it doesn't have the top down, you know, red lighting. Maybe if they'd gone to red alert, it would have been a little better, but Klingons don't look very good in bright light.
I guess
I can just see the director saying, this isn't working for me. Let's go to red alert. Let's change the script. Red alert right here.
That's why they're always better at red alert. Everything looks better.
Yeah, and I wrote that down too. It's because especially with the scene where he beams to the Enterprise and you're looking at him going, what's going on? And then he gets, you know, goes back to the Klingon ship like, oh, everything's all right now. He's under the red light. So I guess Worf has just had a chance to, you know, get that Federation tan. Is it like a farmer's tan for Klingons? You know, Worf has just had a chance to be around the lighting and, you know, maybe like you'll see it around the shoulder area.
If their sensors are based on film, they're always developing them. So they have to keep that red light on all the time or they'll lose all their sensor data. That explains it.
Oh, I'm glad we're talking about the lighting, because this is one of the things that bothers me so much about the Klingons. And every time we see a Klingon ship, it's dark and smoky and red, and I don't understand why. It doesn't seem very practical. I guess it's just because it's cool, but it always bothers me. I'm like, you would be bumping into the wall all the time on that ship.
It keeps you in that warrior's mood by having that. It's all about mood. You've got to set the mood. If you want to go and kill your enemies, you've got to set the mood.
Well, and red is that,
thing does
know,
that better
anger
than red
color.
Lights and smoke. But it's interesting, yeah, because on Klingon ships, they do have that. But then when they go to Kronos, it's like, you know, blue sky. It's a nice looking place. If it's not raining, of course, like it is in Sins of the Father. But
well, with the, with the Bird of Prey ships, I think they're also trying to convey that sense of smallness, that it's a cramped, it's much more, right, you know, submarine typed, you know, whereas the Enterprise bridge is ginormous in comparison. You could fit probably three Klingon bridges inside of it, and everyone has time to stroll around and, you know, put a knee up on the horseshoe, ponder today's, you know, moral dilemma. And on the Klingon ship, you know, if you step 2 feet to the side, you're going to run into another officer.
Well, that reminds me of like when the Klingon captain tells Riker, take your station. Apparently his station is just leaning against the pole.
There's a little T mark on the ground. Yeah. Oh, that's where I stand. Okay.
All right. Well, let's jump into the first topic, that what kicks off this whole story, which is this exchange program. And when now, with all of Star Trek that we've had up to this point, now we can think back and it reminds me of how Phlox is on Earth because he's there as part of this exchange program where, with the Vulcans coming in and bringing this Denobulan doctor in. But here, it's, I guess, the first time. Is this the first time that we have this exchange program that mentioned, I believe? Of course, it comes up later on where we have it in Drumhead, of course, and we have Worf's brother, you know, coming over. But it was an interesting idea where the officers, the not Mordok, beams over, and these guys are in Starfleet uniforms. And then I get like, okay, you have some kind of exchange program going. They're bringing students or cadets or ensigns onto the flagship, and they're going to learn. But then Picard calls Riker down. It's like, oh, you know, I think it might be a good idea if we sent someone to a Klingon ship. There's one in the area. I'll just ring up Starfleet, ask them if it's okay. Klingons will swing by, pick somebody up. It's like there's no paperwork involved in this at all.
Our parents will call their parents, and if Riker can come over and play, and if they say yes, then we'll just beam them over. Well, and that's an interesting point I hadn't thought of, that, you know, when Nott Mordok beams over, that he is a Federation, you know, ensign. So how exactly is this an exchange and not more of a field trip to the flagship of the Enterprise? I mean, if he was
right,
a Benzite in Benzite attire from a Benzite ship, like, that's an exchange program. This is, you know, you got the short straw and you get to come on, you know, your requested post to learn, you know, from the A-team.
Yeah, I think they actually confused themselves, because I think throughout the episode, Mordan kind of refers to, on my ship and on my command, you know, this is it, which would suggest he's a Benzite, whatever they are, Confederation or whatever they are. Yet he does appear in the Starfleet uniform, so I'm like, what's the rules here? You know, shouldn't Riker be wearing a Klingon uniform as he's going through their duty? So I think basically just, you know, the prejudice of Starfleet is everyone wears a uniform. We don't care whether you're going or coming, you're wearing a uniform.
It must be it, but it's weird because he has an ensign pip on his collar. And that whole scene you're talking where he's on the bridge and he's having the conversation with Picard and he's so smug and he's like, I just followed procedures. Look at me. I'm great. And he's telling Picard, like you said, how they would do it on a Benzite ship. And I'm thinking, like, you're wearing a science uniform. You have an ensign pip on your collar. You had to go to the academy. I mean, when did they start actually giving visitors ensign pips? I mean, Wesley can't even get an actual, he's just an acting ensign. Is he even an acting ensign at this point? I guess he is, right?
Yeah.
And he can't even get a full ensign, but here this guy apparently does. And so I don't know, like, I think that in the writing at this point, because TNG was new, it's early second season, they just hadn't settled everything in yet. And so it's, maybe they did confuse themselves a little bit.
The way I justified it in my mind is that he's kind of their equivalent of an ensign, like the lowest rank or something. So they just threw him in, slapped him in a uniform, and then just, you know, do what you got to do.
Is he the Benzite Wesley? Is this a Wesley exchange program?
Yeah, well, exactly, right.
I think so.
Except they didn't want to take Wesley, so they just gave Starfleet the Benzite. But
the Benzites are like, we have this guy. He seems to know everything. He's talking about all the time about being so smart. We're kicking him off the ship. We're not like those Federation people. First excuse, bam, he's out of here.
And we don't exactly know, you know, what the lifespan is of a Benzite. And I mean, it's kind of hard to tell from their features whether or not, how old he is. So he could have served on a Benzite ship for, 20 years and now is applying himself because he wants to help the Federation with all of his theories, you know, my theory. And so it's true. It's while it is a little bit, you know, difference in continuity between the two ships, you know, we can talk theories and retcon it however we like to place it within our mindset.
While we're talking about Wesley and Mordan, I have to bring up the fact the transporter room scene and how absolutely racist Wesley is toward him. First thing he does, he goes up to him, Mordok. No, I'm not Mordok. I'm Mordan. He's like, well, you look just like him. How can you tell each other apart? And I mean, like, we expect like Star Trek and TNG to be like this perfect idealized world where race doesn't exist. And, you know, but Wesley is like really straight up racist to his face.
Well, I kind of discount it because I see that scene as a pocket universe where O'Brien is a lieutenant. Because for some reason he's wearing two gold pips and I don't know why, but this time it popped right out at me and I'm like, wait, everyone calls him Chief. He didn't even have a name for a season. We know he's the Chief. He should have a solid black single pip. He's not an officer. So there's my rant. It's over, but
he works for a living.
He works for a living. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. But no, I'm with Daniel. I actually have racist Wesley in my notes, which is unusual considering he usually wears such a rainbow sweater that you would think he would be tolerant of all the colors of the rainbow. But yeah, and I think when it came to the exchange program, you know, it's largely the Klingon story, but I just think when it comes to looking at this Federation exchange program, that the Benzite experience certainly takes a lot. Which leads me to this question. Who's the more annoying blue alien, Bullions or Benzites?
Oh, Benzites.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mr. Mod is a high contender for Bullions. I think Captain Picard would disagree with you.
But think about how much fun Bullions would be. Like if you go down to Ten Forward and you start having some drinks, they get a little bit drunk. I think, you know, they'd be the guys who are telling the jokes, watching the football game with you. They'd be like your pal.
Like a party
Benzites
race.
Benzites would just be a pain in the ass, I think. Arrogant, smoking all the time.
What would happen
He's
if
a chain vaporizer.
What would happen if a Benzite and a Bullion both got into small talk? I'm thinking of that scene with Data and that one Starfleet commander doing the small talk together. What would happen
if Commander Hutchinson.
Yeah. If Bullion and a Benzite, like, the topic is ship's efficiency, go, and we'll come back in 8 hours, see if you're still at it.
And they'll still be talking, yeah.
That sounds like a great spinoff, little comedy spinoff show right there.
Bullion and Benzite together at last.
It's after hours because it goes a little blue. So,
They could also open a bed and breakfast, so they'd be Benzite and Bullion's bed and breakfast. It'd be great.
Well, one thing I wanted to mention is the scene after Racist Wesley. We have the ultimate man conversation of Riker and Picard not looking at each other and firing weapons while having a discussion because they don't make eye contact in this entire scene as they play red light, green light, shooting, you know, in a dark, we don't have a budget soundstage for this great, you know, target practice scene, which is a great scene. And it's great to see other parts of the Enterprise, but I just was always taken away with, wow, they don't even look at each other and they make this, you know, decision to send him to this other ship while they're shooting weapons. It's great.
I like Picard calls out, Commander Riker, report to the phaser range. Like, phaser range? They go down and start shooting. And I was thinking that Picard has to call Riker down because Picard wants to play phaser shooting. And unlike fencing, where Picard has the dedicated fencing officer who's always on standby for when Picard wants to
fence,
Picard can just go down there and there's always an officer there to fence him. He doesn't have that for phaser range, so he has to actually call someone down.
He doesn't want to fight Guinan because she'd kick his butt.
I mean, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Probably should call Worf. He's not that good.
She really would. You know, but before we completely leave the racist Wesley scene there, like you said, Daniel, we do expect The Next Generation to be more about, you know, how race doesn't exist and it's a more enlightened view of these things. So you could look at it as Wesley's very young. He's just learning the ropes. He's just, you know, he's intelligent, but he stumbles a lot. He saves the ship, but he often saves the ship from problems that he created on his own. And it could just be a case here where they're making a point like, haha, look at young Wesley. He hasn't learned yet that you can't judge people just by the way they look. And just because all of these Benzites look similar, you know, it doesn't mean that they are. So that could be the message, although I do prefer the way it's handled later on in TNG and onward in Star Trek, where it's just, they kind of avoid taking that route, unless they're doing it with an alien race, but they typically wouldn't take this route with our own people.
I think it's interesting that with this episode, and then with a season one episode title that's currently escaping my brain, that Wesley, you know, if he ever wanted a side job, he could be a Benzite counselor. Because this is the second Benzite he successfully counsels and helps their self-confidence. If you remember the other Benzite from season one, Mordon, who, you know, was, oh, I'm not going to pass this Starfleet Academy test. Don't worry, yeah, you can do it. And then this time he bucks up this Benzite too. So, you know, if Wesley doesn't, you know, gets kicked out after first duty, you know, he may want to go to Benzite Prime and be a counselor there, because I think he'd be a heck of a job over there.
They'll have to add a lavender stripe to his Technicolor sweater because he needs to have the Counselor Troy lavender counseling color code.
Just don't give him a V-neck. I mean,
oh God,
that, I don't know if anyone wants to see that.
You guys do know why he wears the Technicolor sweater, right? I've explained this before. He has command, engineering, and science colors on his shirt, all three, because he's so smart. He has mastered all divisions.
I thought he was wearing three sweaters that were progressively smaller.
The other problem with Wesley being a Benzite counselor would be he would dismiss his first patient. The next patient would come in and be like, and he'd be like, "Hey, I just told you to leave," but it would be the next patient. He just wouldn't be able to tell.
It's like, that's it. You all need to have name tags. And and where we'll stencil it on your little breathing apparatus. Maybe it'll be a different shape, different color. We'll work out a name tag system.
It says, "Hello, my name is Moore," and then a line where you can write in the second half of your name.
Doc, Don.
And then Wesley would have like a little
more Bill, more Ben.
All right, well, let's jump into Klingon stuff because this is primarily a Klingon episode. And one thing, we see Klingons in TOS, although they're not really there as often as we remember them being. And even when they are, they're just the villain to go up against Kirk. And then we see them a bit in the films up to this point, and we learn a little bit more about them. But, you know, really delving into them the way that you can on a television show is something that hadn't been done yet. And this is a case where TNG really, you know, they had Klingons a couple of times in the first season. But here we really get to go to a Klingon ship and we get to start seeing, like you said at the beginning, different types of Klingons. And, you know, these Klingons that have actual lives and issues like we have. And Riker gets to go over and talk to them. And what do we think about the aspects of Klingon culture and also the command structure that we see here in this episode?
That I would not want to serve on a Klingon ship. But no, it's.
But the ladies will be checking you out.
Well, no, that's. I don't know. I think Riker is the perfect person to go on this exchange because he has that confidence to go toe to toe with a Klingon to make his presence known and to get that authority right away, which is so critical to their command structure. I think any other. I mean, you send Beverly. That's, she's not even in this season. You know, Troy is not gonna work very well. Data he's a fish out of water with humans, let alone Klingon culture. Worf
I think
is a
you
Klingon.
Could send Pulaski. Pulaski wouldn't take any crap from those Klingons
until they leaned on her and she snapped in two. But
but she would piss them off. She would be like, "I don't care what you think, Klong." And he would say, "My name is Klang." Klong, Klang, what's the difference? What is my name and what is not?
And then she probably had a relationship with Lieutenant Clagg's father. So, you know.
Probably,
oh,
yes.
Yeah, that's right.
No, that's true. I think she of all of the people to not take Guff, I think Pulaski has. She's from the school of, you know, hard Klingons, and doesn't. She wouldn't put up with anything.
Though, speaking about Klingon culture, so Chris, if at any point during this podcast, Darren or Daniel and I think you aren't behaving in the right way that a podcast host should, are we allowed to give you an honorable retirement from this podcast?
Yeah, you'll just hold your bat'leth up to the screen, up to the camera, and you might not want to swing it at me, though, because, you know, I'm not responsible for any damage to your equipment. but it's interesting to see the inside of the Klingon ship, to see the TNG makeup in more depth and in its environment of being in, as we talked about, the smoky environment, the red lighting and such. Seeing the Klingon women is this the first time, I believe so, that we saw Klingon women in the modern Klingon makeup?
Yeah, because...
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Kalar doesn't show up for, because, like, I think, two or three more episodes.
Right, right.
They're like, oh, that's right. Like, this race has women. These. Maybe we should bring one into another episode. And that's a great part of this episode because you get to see so many different Klingons. And while they're all wearing kind of the same uniform, it's just there's the makeup on this, I think, actually was nominated for an Emmy makeup. I don't think it won unjustly, but there's the makeup from the Benzites to, you know, the Klingons is really, really well done. It really holds up well, especially, you know, if you catch it on the season 2 Blu-ray, it holds up to that scrutiny.
The Benzite makeup in HD looks really good.
It does, yeah.
It actually looks more realistic than it does in SD because you can see all the attention to detail that was made into putting splotches on the skin and making it look like an actual organic life form would look after someone has aged for a while.
Although I did read that I think it's the exact same actor who played Mordok was brought back to play that, probably because he fit the head mold that they had already cast, and it's a nice budget save when you don't have to make a new not Mordok helmet.
No. That's right. Yeah, his name, we make fun of the Mor part of the name, but he's actually Mindon, so it's kind of
so we're all racist.
Yeah, he talked about, whoops, he thought like, we're just like Wesley on the show. So
everyone's a little
but
bit rich.
John Putsch, he said that he was excited that they brought him back. He thought, wow, they really liked me as Mordok. And then he realized, no, it just costs a lot of money to do the makeup. And they like the fact that it's me. And so they don't have to do it again. So I come back and I'm a different character, but they don't have to fit makeup to a new actor, so yeah.
And I guess one thing I want to point out with this episode, I mean, I think, you know, here it is in 2013, we've been through all of the different series, but I mean, this episode really does set up a lot of stuff that, I mean, we take for granted, but I mean, like, Gah, this is the episode with Gah, you know, so it's one of those things where it's like, oh, of course, it's always been there, but no, this is it.
It's almost surprising when you watch this now, when Riker's introducing all the Klingon food, and he says, yeah, it's called Gah. And you're thinking, it's almost like a human food, someone saying, yes, it's called tomato soup. It's because we're so accustomed to Gah now as being like the staple of the Klingon diet. And we do forget that at the time that this came on, Gah was a new thing.
Yeah, I think Klingon blood wine made its first appearance in bottle, barrel, or glass in this episode.
Amazing. And Pippia's Claw apparently is not very popular because it doesn't turn up very often later on in Star Trek. So.
It's no rogue cake blood pie.
There's two really strong... There's two great scenes in this episode, though, where they're eating. The before scene where Riker is sampling... you know, everything in 10 forward, and then the after scene when he's dining with the Klingon crew. And that's a great way to really take the episode because so much of our culture comes from sharing a meal, be it exploring what another culture or community, you know, eats, but, or, and then obviously eating alongside them. But again, we get Ironclad dated your father. Pulaski comes in and has her own opinions on the unappetizingness of Klingon food. But I think the effects department did a great job of making it look like it came from another world.
They actually did. Yeah.
I think this is another example of just Jonathan Frakes being a trooper. Because in season one, he was in that gunk for Skin of Evil, just volunteered, and I forget, you know, if y'all remember what that was, to be in that, you know, thrown in that thing. And then in season two, he's just chomping down on whatever the heck that is that they put over there.
Yeah, it's like tar.
I'm glad we're also talking about the scene on the Klingon ship. I'm not the biggest fan of Klingons and their culture generally.
Neither am I.
But yeah. What I do like about this scene, and especially if you had only been watching TNG up to this point, is that you get this sense that Klingons have a sense of humor, which is like a lot of where the fun of it comes from. Like, because if you're just watching Worf, you're like, wow, this guy is so dry and boring and stiff, especially, you know, early on, the first two seasons. And then we get this scene where these Klingons are just, they're just busting on Riker, you know, maybe we can get one of the females to breastfeed you. And it's really funny stuff. It's good. And I really enjoyed that part of the scene.
That's a great point. Although that comment that the Klingon made right there, I thought, you think you're being funny, but you know, Riker likes that.
Yeah. Don't tempt him with a good time.
For those keeping score or doing the drinking game at home, this is another episode where Riker gets the girl. I mean, just gets the Klingon girl. I mean, doesn't matter whether they're androgynous or android or, you know, whatever. Riker gets the girl. Klingon, he's been on the Klingon ship for like 5 hours.
He's not very attractive, but I will have him.
But I will have him. Or both.
One or both.
You know, when you talk about Worf being the most boring guy, and when Worf is especially here, because later on, especially into Deep Space Nine, you start to feel like Worf actually is a Klingon, especially in DS9, once he is with Martok all the time, you feel like he's more of a Klingon. But here in early TNG, and part of it is the makeup, you know, the way that they've done his head and everything, and him having the Starfleet uniform, and part of it is, of course, that the Klingons aren't really developed themselves at this point either. But when Worf is talking to Riker about the Klingon culture, he's like, yes, I've learned everything about my heritage. It reminds me of if you talk to someone who's like, say, a second generation Chinese American, Japanese American, Italian American, whatever, you know, their grandparents maybe came from some other country, but their parents grew up in the U.S. and then they were born there and they grew up there, but yet they believe that they are an expert on whatever country their grandparents came from. It's like that. And then when you know, if you've spent time in that country, that everything's just kind of not right. It's kind of like, it's very like secondhand information. And that's how I feel when Worf is talking about Klingons, especially through the early part of the Next Generation, that like he knows a lot about Klingon culture from books, but knowing about something from a book is very different from knowing about it by actually living there in that culture. And that's one thing that I find interesting about Worf, but also it's a good thing that this episode is doing, because it is showing us the realities of the Klingon culture. And so much about this is just finding common ground. And it's what TNG should be doing at this point, because the way that they set up the Klingons and Starfleet, the Federation as allies, they're allowing us to start trying to find common ground between different cultures and see what it's really like.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I had that same feel, you know, from that hallway scene. And there's that other episode where the two Klingons beam over and they try to take over the ship, and they're speaking to them and talking about, you know, the heart of the warrior. And again, you get this sense of, yes, Worf knows about his people, but he wasn't raised by them. And there's just that disconnect his character struggles with throughout his entire life, and eventually resolves, you know, a vast majority of it by the time he's inducted into the House of Martok. But along the way, he he's learning it as we're learning it, because that's the technique the show is using to teach us Klingon mm-hmm. culture along with Worf. But that also, that hallway scene, you know, it's Worf's tactical plan 101. If you're not sure, give them a small device that they can use to transport back. He just loves doing that. And I think he did that in Nemesis as well, but although it's gotten a lot smaller by then.
Well, I think what Worf does here is he knows his history. He knows that when you're sending one of your command personnel into an area where there are Klingons, usually either slap something on the back of their uniform or you give them in person the transponder. So, you know, he looked up Commander or Captain Spock's file about Captain Kirk's encounter, so he knew what to do.
Because he couldn't do FaceTime with old Spock to find out how
with old
he
Worf
would handle an
from
encounter with
all
Klingons.
Good things. Who's bitter and a governor and grumpy.
Well, as also as part of the Federation and Klingon coming together, I think it's very nice how the Klingons all throughout the entire episode, even if there's probably not even a human in the room, speak Federation standard instead of speaking Klingon. I think that's very yes. nice of them. They don't have to do that.
Well, they were ordered to, and they obey orders.
Yeah, see, this is another abuse of the translator in Star Trek. I mean, it's used so sporadically and weirdly. I mean, even if they were speaking in Klingon, Riker should have been able to understand them anyways. So the universal translator should have been able to pick that up. I don't know. That whole thing was kind of a strange part of the episode for me.
I found it interesting in that it was like when they could be political negotiations or they could be business meetings or whatever, but when they're global and when a U.S. company having a business meeting with, say, you know, a Japanese company, the expectation is that everyone else should speak English. And I felt that in Star Trek here, that the expectation was that everyone else should speak Federation standard. Like, everyone should speak the human's language, not their own language, even in a situation where it would have been much more appropriate for Riker to speak Klingon than for the Klingons to speak English. Especially considering that, again, I didn't get the feeling that these Klingons were expecting to have a Starfleet officer on their ship. They just happened to be in the area, and they said, can you swing by and pick up this guy? He's going to come on your ship and learn about you for a week.
My dad and your dad are friends, so I guess we got to play.
Yeah. Well, though this leads to the question, what happened to their first officer?
Well, actually, their first officer isn't he on the ship here at this point?
I think that his first officer is now been demoted to live gawk duty, because I think they have an officer on every ship that all they do is wrangle the gawk and make sure it stays alive, because Gok is best served live, and if there's no one to make sure our Gok supply is live, you're going to have a bunch of unhappy Klingons.
Can you imagine Klingon schools where in the lunchroom, the Klingon lunchroom ladies are opening up a big can of live Gok and scooping it out?
And then retired by their honorable second as not allowed.
They get the kids get their carton of non-alcoholic blood wine to go with their lunch.
In the paper carton that's hard to open.
they try to get the straw in, and then they just smash, you know, the entire thing.
One other thing I do want to talk about are Klingon stereotypes. And I especially feel it in the captain here, Captain Kargan, who really does seem like the stereotypical Klingon. And part of that, I think, is watching this episode after so many years of Star Trek, where we're accustomed to Klingons that are more well-rounded than this. I do like here that you have a contrast, though, because you have Clagg, who says, you know, I think Riker's telling the truth. I don't think, though, you know, why would he beam over here if he's going to be killed? And that was nice to see. It's the first steps of fleshing out the Klingons and showing that there's more to them than just the cardboard cutout core Koloth type Klingon that we had from the original series. But Qarghan is like, he doesn't say it's a great day to die, but you feel it, right? It's like, we're in battle. It's a Federation ship. We're going to destroy them. And you're going to give the order. Ha ha. Do you feel like this is done more out of just not figuring out who the Klingons are yet? Or do you feel like Qarghan is written this way to balance against Clegg so that they can really play up that idea that, no, the Klingons aren't all one-track minds. They're not all bloodthirsty warriors. They actually do analyze the situation the way that we do. And that's, again, common ground that we're finding as we're starting to understand each other a little bit more.
I'm not really sure what the intent was, but it was really hard to take him seriously, the captain. Towards the end when, they're literally giving instructions over hailing frequencies on how to fix it. We will repair it. And he's still just being bloodthirsty and no, we fire everything. And it's just, it's tiresome. I was like, man, they could have somehow got around this. It just felt like really weak writing to make this character so one-tracked, so, you know, headstrong that he was determined to go into battle no matter what. But that's just my opinion, I guess.
Well, it reminds me a lot of, like you said, it's showing a contrast between the two Klingons, the first officer or the second officer and the captain. But it also shows, you know, the Klingon Empire has bad captains too that make rash decisions. I mean, that, you know, fast forward into Star Trek, you have the episode like The Wounded, where you have a rogue Starfleet captain who jeopardizes, you know, a peace treaty with the Cardassians because of his, you know, not being able to shake off we're enemies. In similar way, this captain could not be able to shake off, well, the Federation are our enemies. Like, they've always been our enemies. My father's fought them. I've fought them. And, but I think in some ways he's kind of just intimidated by Riker, where Clegg is below him. So he has to be subservient, but Riker's right beneath him and literally does take over his ship. And so it's almost like it's justified where in his culture, you know, my first officer is the one I have to kind of watch the most, not necessarily trust the most, but watch the most.
You're absolutely right. And that kind of comes to obviously to a head at the end of the episode when he hits Riker and get him off my ship. And Riker knew that. I mean, he when he's talking to Picard and he says, no, sometimes you have to learn when not to duck. So I think you're absolutely right that the captain was completely intimidated and devastated when Riker got command of a ship. And it's an interesting, that was probably the most interesting thing, I think, about the captain.
See, I think the difference between the Klingon Empire and Starfleet is that with, you know, the level of incompetency, you get promoted. With Klingons, it's captain. With Starfleet, it's admirals. So we put all our incompetence to be admirals. Right. But for Klingons, they keep them in command of starships as captains.
Piloting the USS desk.
Everyone watch for Philip's next article, Bad Klingon Captains.
Claptons.
Claptons.
One of the things I thought was interesting about this episode was that because the A plot and the B plot were in such different locations, I mean, you basically had B plot music, which with the little, you know, high-pitched synth strings. It was great. It was very TNG, but it was like basically saying, hey, we're on the B plot in the brightly lit ship with the blue alien. Not the A plot. The dark lit ship with Riker. I mean, it was, I don't think I've seen more contrast at that point between an A and a B plot, but it was fun and it worked well. It tied in with the organism and the space rust, but it didn't. Having them in two separate locations, though, really did make it feel like, and now back to, you know, Ensign Not Mordock on the USS Enterprise with his theme music. Maybe that's what the little, you know, breathalyzer thing in front of him is. It's playing his own little MP3s back into his Benzite ears.
But ultimately, the A and B plot serve the same story in the episode. I mean, yeah, obviously they're very different, visually, but the whole point is this kind of cross-cultural idea, like how do we adapt to other cultures? How do other cultures adapt to us? And I thought that was interesting, and very interesting to see how Klingons handle things differently than the Federation do.
And I think one of the values of this episode, and one of the reasons I was kind of pushing to pick this episode, is because it's on to remind everyone it's a season two episode. And I know season one and season two of TNG kind of get a bad rap, but this is a great episode. It's season two. It has all this great stuff in the A story, the B story. And also Worf, who, you know, you think of in the first two, three, four, possibly all seven seasons, kind of gets, you know, put in the back. But he gets a lot of action here, you know, supervising, you know, the Not Mordon, you know, you have to impress me. And I just want to point out, this is maybe the first and only time Worf actually gets the first shot and shoots the intruder on the bridge, because usually he's the one getting shot.
Or tossed around.
Right, because if you want to show that your intruder is powerful, have him knock the Klingon over, right? Yeah. That's the sign that you've got a badass intruder on your bridge.
But having
he'd eaten his complement of books that morning, so he was very strong and ready to take on the Klingons. You know?
Maybe he got to level 3 in his holodeck program.
Oh, the one with Skeletor?
With Skeletor, yeah.
with in quotes, not Skeletor. And,
are you trying to say all Skeletors look alike?
Apparently. Whatever was found in the closet of Paramount's lot.
Yeah.
That was Skeletron, not Skeletor.
Oh.
That's right. You guys, you skeleton creatures all look the same to me.
How do you tell each other apart?
An interesting part with once Riker becomes the captain of the Klingon ship, it's interesting because later he'll face off against Picard as well. A couple of times you have the episode where Peak Performance, he's up against him, Best of Both Worlds, he's up against him, and he just has that signature swagger when he's sitting in that chair, like, I am owning this ship, and you are going to back down. And Captain Riker's awesome to see.
And another little buy-through that we see... just on the side, I'm going through season 3 right now, and I just saw the great episode, The Defector. And there's a scene between the Romulan admiral and Worf. And the Romulan is kind of goading Worf and swearing at him in Klingon. And Riker then swears at the Romulan in Klingon. And it's interesting, because I would never have thought of it, but it traces straight back to this episode, I'm sure, where he learned his fair share of Klingon swears.
Good point. Well, we talked about the B plot a little bit, the space rest, and it was almost like a Seinfeld episode, right? Where there are these storylines going on that seem completely unrelated, except maybe, I mean, they did scan here and they saw a little resting on the ship, but otherwise, like you say, it is like dark ship, light ship, different music as well. The Klingon music was nice, actually, because they picked up, very subtly, they picked up the Klingon motif that you hear, especially in the films.
Yeah, it was kind of nice to not hear the main Klingon theme every single time we went to the Klingon ship.
But it's in there. If you listen closely, it is in there, which was really nicely done. But then at the end, you know, these two storylines come back together. So that's the Seinfeld effect.
Well, and that space rust is really interesting, because I get it on the Enterprise D, and when they scan on it, it's like, okay, the camera's somewhere on the saucer and they got this nice view of, you know, the nacelle pylon. Where is that camera on the Klingon bird of prey? It's on the little neck part, and the camera's like looking straight out of it. I mean, did they shoot a little probe and it's taking selfies back at the, you know, Klingons? But I'm sure it's
bird of prey selfies.
Bird of prey selfies, you know, for their Klingon Facebook.
That's right.
That's where their former first officer is. He's driving. He's piloting a small shuttle to take camera photos wherever they need to. He got demoted to camera duty.
And this is us flying in this quadrant. This is us flying past a nebula. this is us in attack position, and then we put our wings back for non-attack position.
Like.
And if you look closely inside the little windows, you can actually see a couple Klingons photobombing that picture. But you have it's only in the high-definition version, so.
They're mock fighting with Batliths, which turn into real Batlith fights because, you know.
They're Klingons, right?
They're Klingons.
Maybe that explains the red lighting. It's for Instagram.
All right. Well, we're closing in on an hour here pretty soon. So let's close out with our final thoughts about the episode. And Darren, is there anything else we didn't talk about in this episode that you wanted to touch on?
No, I think we hit many things. I really just like that last scene where Riker is basically, Riker's in charge, even before he usurps command from the Klingon captain. Subtly with, I didn't pick it up until a little bit later into the episode, but when he says, get 40,000 kilometers, you know, then it'll cut down their response time, get that close. And then later Picard says, okay, we have to close to 40,000 to engage transport. I'm like, oh, Riker, always thinking. Like, he knows he's got his plan, and he probably had that plan the moment he stepped on board if he needed to, you know, do something drastic and hand his pill bottle to the Klingon captain and have him be beamed away. But it's a great episode. It's a really strong Riker episode. You learn a lot about him just as much as you learn about the Klingons. And it's nice to see the non-trombone playing I'm sitting in the center seat Riker every once in a while. And but one of the minor aspects that I do enjoy is it puts Data in the number one seat. And anytime you put Data in a command role, I am all for it. So I noticed that after right before they beam Riker over in the very beginning, I'm like, wait, why is Data sitting next to Picard? Oh, of course, because Riker's in the transporter room, you know, ready for Lieutenant Orion to beam him over. And but yeah, I love it when Data's put in charge. I love it when Riker is put in charge. You know, everyone should get a chance. Well, maybe not Wesley, but everyone should get a chance in that center seat. And it just builds such a great episode that just teaches us so much about Klingons and the characters that at this point we're really starting to gain traction with.
And don't forget to give your rating for this episode.
Oh, my rating. Oh, let's see. I would rate this I would say this would be 5 barrels of blood wine out of 5. It's like people say, season 2, oh, there wasn't, you know, a ton of great stuff in season 2. There was, and this was definitely, I think it was the highest rated show up to that point in Next Gen. So five full barrels of blood wine out of 5 for me.
Wow. Wow. How about you, Daniel?
I would mirror almost everything Darren said. I'm a big fan of Riker, so it's great to see him, you know, take the stage and kind of show what he's made of. We're told constantly on TNG that Riker is ready for the captain's chair. Riker should have his own command. Here we actually get to see it. And obviously a few times later on, but this is the first time we really get to see Riker take charge and own how he should. Also seeing Data, yeah, as the first officer is great. Anytime we can see that is fantastic as well. Like I said before, I'm not the biggest Klingon fan. I don't dislike them. I'm just kind of indifferent towards them. But this episode is strong. And I really enjoyed a lot of the Klingon banter. Like I said, the humor is enjoyable. And the whole story is it moves along and probably one of the stronger ones in season 2. So I would give this 6 racist Wesleys.
How about you, Philip?
This is just a great episode. And I mean, just for almost everything we've talked about, but I just want to point out, you know, we have a great Picard-Riker relationship in this. We have a great O'Brien for people who love O'Brien. I mean, he's basically all of the all the second season episodes in the back half of it. We have great Klingon, explore Klingon culture. You know, we were supposed to maybe do that in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, but didn't get a chance to fully do it. It's lots of Klingon culture here. Just everything you would want in an episode is in this, you know, second season episode. And so it's a great episode. Recommend it for anyone who's bashful about checking out early in TNG. And as for my rating, I would give it 8 out of 10 Klingon woman breastfeedings.
Oh, wow.
Has to be an even number.
That's the most, has to be that's the most graphic number. Rating ever given on the Ready Room.
Never mind. I won't touch it. I won't.
Oh.
No, but Riker will.
Yeah. Oh. I was going to ask if they have ridges, but I don't know if we're ever privy to that information on Star Trek. But
depends whether they have augment blood or not.
Before, you know, the Duras sisters, where, you know, they show the true fashion of Klingon women. Apparently that hadn't come into vogue yet with these two.
Lursa Bator, yeah.
Well, for me, this episode is, it's fun. I liked it more when it first aired than I do now, just because of the way I approach Star Trek now. I like the fact that they start to make an effort to actually flesh out the Klingons. And I don't feel like Star Trek ever really gets there with the Klingons compared to some of the other races. I feel like they don't go far enough in general throughout Star Trek as a whole in showing us the multifaceted sides of Klingon society, but at least they're trying to do it here. And this plants a lot of the seeds that get picked up later on as they really, really do start to explore the Klingon culture, which is nice. And I like the fact that they're taking advantage, like I said earlier, of the Klingon Federation Alliance, the fact that they have Worf, a Klingon officer on the Enterprise, who can, even if it's just book knowledge, start to help humans learn more about Klingons. And it's a nice analogy in TNG as the show was being written at the end of the 1980s and into the 90s as the Cold War was coming to an end and the Soviet Union was collapsing, that we do see these two longtime arch enemies starting to come together. So I really like that part of it. The overall story, it's a good Riker story, as you guys say, so I do enjoy that part. Overall, I leave the story feeling, a little bit disappointed, because I feel like it's a very simplistic story. And I feel like they set up the finding common ground and going over the ship. And I wanted to see that explored a little bit more than they did. But again, they only have 45 minutes and you can't really do it in one episode. So I'll have to take this as part of the overall exploration of Klingons. But for this episode by itself, for me, shows great potential for TNG. It shows that the show is maturing, but I'm going to give it 4 Pippius claws.
Yeah, being such a early episode in season 2, I would have loved if they had brought the character back and brought Klang back as an exchange onto the Enterprise D. I think that would have been a great return to the themes of this episode.
That specific character, yeah, that would have made more sense. Especially since the exchange program seems to keep going, you know. We have more exchanges coming up, so why not? And then they can send Pulaski over. That's when they'll send her over. That's what happened to her at the end of season 2. She became a permanent exchange student to a Klingon bird of prey.
And if Klang showed up, he could then call Riker out on his father relationship advice hypocrisy.
Oh, I wrote that down.
And he clearly gives him.
He's your father.
That would be great.
Who would not want to talk to their father after 30 years?
I could think of one or two people. Yeah.
Well, guys, it's been really fun talking about A Matter of Honor. And, you know, we brought you all together on the Ready Room today for a very specific reason. And that is the fact that we get asked quite often, because we have the orb, we have Warp 5, we have Do the Journey. We get asked quite often, why don't you guys have a dedicated TNG podcast? And, you know, it's not because we don't want to have one. It's just because, you know, it takes time to plan these things, to bring together a cast, to create a show and get it launched. But that's what we've done. And I'm very happy to introduce the three of you to everyone as the cast of our upcoming dedicated TNG podcast.
Yay. At last.
So what do you guys have planned for the show?
Everything
what,
awesome.
What don't we have planned?
That's nice. Right.
You know, we talk.
There's going to be saucer separations. There's going to be red alerts and warp core overloads.
There may even be a barrel roll.
Do a barrel roll. The barrel roll. Press B or R.
That's right.
There'd better be a barrel roll on
it. Every
TNG
time that door comes down, we're going to be barrel rolling under it because Geordi does it right. It's going to be just like the orb and To the Journey.
To the journey!
Where it's not a straight episode review show, but we will be taking a look at a lot of the different aspects of the show, the characters, the races, you know, when applicable, when it does touch on things that happen in a particular episode, we will touch on that. But, you know, all three of us, this is our top series that we just enjoy, have absorbed, memorized even to a point. But I think it is going to be just a lot of fun because the best part of these shows is the talk between us when we get to share our different points and, you know, just try to out nerd each other on our knowledge of TNG. What do you two think that how we're going to head forward with this?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a great show because I think the thing about the three of us is that we're all going to have different perspectives and opinions. You know, Daniel and I will wrestle about how terrible / wonderful Barkley is. And then Darren, wonderful, I'm sure, will join that conversation. But it's also going to, you know, take TNG and how much we love it, but also be honest about things that, you know, took a while to work out or maybe even never worked out. And we may or may not even mention that last movie.
Ooh, another point of contention, Philip.
Yes, we're setting it up early. So, but, you know, it's a great 7, 8, 9, 10 year mission aboard the Enterprise D&E. And we're going to go in front of the scenes, behind the scenes, and even in between. So looking forward to it.
Yeah. My only real problem with Nemesis is that they cut Leffler out of the wedding scene.
Yeah. Well, and that brings up an interesting point too, is something unique to the TNG podcast that none of the other specific show podcasts will have is we get to play around a little bit more in the movie universe, and as well as how TNG kind
we got
of
movies
set, TNG set up some of the other series as well. So TNG has more influence, you know, in some of the later series than the other ones. So we get to kind of delve into that, which will be interesting as well.
That's a good point about the episode we talked about today, Matter of Honor, too, that, you know, setting up the Klingons here. Think about what that did for DS9 later on as well. So excellent point.
Yeah, I'll admit I was a little put off. I was been listening to the first episodes of To the Journey and The Orb, and they specifically stated this isn't just another Next Gen series, because there's plenty of those out there. But that's true. We're not going to be just another Next Gen series. I think we have a lot to bring to it. You know, good discussion for really a show that, let's just say, without Next Gen, you probably wouldn't have this era of Star Trek. It was the great experiment to bring a show back that ran for 3 seasons and was canceled, and it worked, and it was through the efforts of many different people, both in front of the camera and behind, but it really gave us this era of Star Trek, in my humble opinion.
And if folks don't like the show at first, you know, Daniel's going to change his hair as we go through different podcasts. And the first season
I'm going to disappear for the whole second season.
Right. And the first season or two may be rough of it, but then we'll hit our stride and we're going to put on some collars onto our shirts here, and it'll be great.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to when you guys stop zipping up in the front, because it's just a weird look, I have to say.
And
all going to grow beards?
I'm on not even last the entire
yes,
season.
Yes, you should.
You never know. Anything could happen.
Well, I think for the final episodes of the show, we should bring all of our family members on just to talk about Star Trek as well, you know, kind of like season 7 does. So.
Definitely. All right, guys. Well, let's let everyone go. But before we do that, tell everyone where they can find you around the internets. So, Darren, where can people find you as well as your other show?
Yes, I also host a sci-fi show called The Dr. Sci-Fi Show, which is from my website, drsci-fi.com. And I focus on not just Star Trek, but I think 30% of my episodes so far have been Star Trek related. But I do try to keep it broad enough and cover all sorts of sci-fi that's happening in television and movies, have great people on. I love just talking with people who are passionate about their particular fandom. It doesn't matter if it's one of the big ones like Star Wars or Star Trek, but it's really great just sharing conversations with people who just enjoy the prospects and the greatness that sci-fi gives us as a genre. So you can find me there if you want to reach out. A lot of places I'm listed as Dr. Sci-Fi, but a great place would be Twitter, at Dr. Sci-Fi. Dr. Sci-Fi.
Excellent. And Daniel, where can people find you?
Well, besides occasionally being on the Ready Room here and in the future TNG show, I'm just on any social network of your choice under the username 1UpDan, where I'm frequently chatting about Star Trek or Star Wars or anything nerdy or exciting or fun. So hit me up on any of those.
That's where you try to one-up people, right?
I do, frequently.
Usually about Barclay.
I have to say, I love your icon. I think that's such a clever clever use of that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Of the mushroom.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us today, guys.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
Well, Chris, that was a great chat with Darren and Daniel, my next generation crew, talking about A Matter of Honor. There's no other group of guys or group of people I'd like to have talking about all things Galaxy Class in the 24th century.
Definitely. I'm glad that we were able to get all three of you guys together for this week's show, you know, to prepare everyone for the three of you, the trio, to talk about TNG every week here on the network. And I'm really excited to hear your take on the show each week, and I know that our listeners are as well.
Well, I thank the Ready Room and you, Chris, for being our Farpoint station.
Just don't ask me why an apple keeps appearing on my desk, even though it wasn't there before. I have no comment. All right. Well, yeah, it was really fun talking about A Matter of Honor. But, you know, it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on the network this week. So here are some other things that you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Sacrifice of Angels.
Again, Dukat in his overconfidence. Should we have anybody go after him? No.
Nah, fine. Just let him go.
Yeah, all right. I mean, we'll destroy him when he gets here.
The Ready Room.
Khan.
But because they had to do this convolution, and they don't. I mean, Kirk should have had a reaction to that being Khan, and when he says the name Khan, that should mean he didn't say my name is Noonien. You know, he said Khan, and you would at least have a thing in your mind going, oh. Genetically enhanced Khan, this has got to be the Khan.
To the journey!
The fight.
I'll never forgive you, listeners, for putting me through watching that again. Although this episode did give us the line, was your opponent firing some type of energy weapon at you? And then Chakotay goes, just his gloves. Commentary, Trek Stars.
Richard Matheson recap.
And my favorite chapter in the Matheson life is when he was hired by Rod Serling to work on The Twilight Zone, the first season of The Twilight Zone, because that is a fantastic moment in history where Rod Serling was creating something that would eventually become an incredibly important artifact of history.
Warp 5.
The Mako.
Well, the employment arrangements are actually relatively interesting to contemplate. As you know, you joked about whether they were contractors or not. But as you've stated, they are outside of Starfleet.
Trek News and Views.
7 of 9 Day.
She was a bit overused and it was a bit ridiculous, some of the things her magical nanoprobes could do, but...
Literary Treks.
Mission's End.
The question is, do you feel like Section 31 is overused? Everyone wants to use Section 31, and so they just keep popping up in every story, and I think sometimes it does a disservice to the idea of Section 31.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new shows for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows for you, and that's going to happen even more often now that the TNG podcast is launching. And you can find it all at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. You can stream from the website. You can download files from the website. many ways for you to get the shows. So download them, check them out. You can visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. Philip, one thing that we ask listeners to do from time to time, though not every show, is to drop by iTunes and leave us a star rating and a written review. And we had one in the UK iTunes store this week. And this is from listener JamieFriend12, who is someone that I talk to on Twitter quite a bit. And Jamie said, "Talking all things Trek," gave us 5 stars and said, "I listen to lots of different Trek FM shows. If you like all things Trek, listen to The Ready Room. It covers all of Trek as well as current news. It always has a great in-depth discussion, different subjects each week, top-notch podcast, 5 stars. So we really thank Jamie for those nice words about The Ready Room. And, you know, as he says, we cover a lot of different subjects, and The Ready Room is the only place where you will find the truth behind the connection between Unification and Mary Poppins.
That's right, the only place, and you can get your drink from the replicator, sit back, and discover the truth behind Trek right here at the Ready Room.
That's right. So please drop by iTunes and leave us a rating and a review. We love to hear from you. It does help other listeners find the Ready Room as they search iTunes for Star Trek podcasts. It only takes about 30 seconds, so we'd love for you to do that for us. And we really thank you, Jamie, and everyone else who has left us reviews. So, Philip, I'm wondering if anyone has comments on A Matter of Honor or, you know, our ideas for Star Trek TV shows or whatever. If you do, please go to trek.fm/contact. There is a form there, and you can send us an email that way. Choose to send to a show. Choose The Ready Room. That will come to us by email. We'd also love to hear your voice. If you look along the right-hand side of any page, you'll see a tab that says Send Voicemail. If you click that, a box will appear. You can use your webcam's microphone to record a message for us, and from that box, you can upload it to us as an MP3 file. If you'd like to talk with other listeners of Trek FM shows, you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums. There's a section there for TNG, one for The Ready Room, different ones for many, many different topics, and you could even create your own, so drop by there. And then if you're in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter, where we tweet away all the time about Star Trek under username trekfm. Now, Philip, what if people would like to find you personally, maybe ask you about some Badmirals or other questions about Star Trek, TNG, where should they go?
Well, they may find me in the Klingon mess hall trying to figure out exactly what there is to eat around here, but they can also find me on Twitter. My handle there is NC Public Servant, being from North Carolina, NC Public Servant, and they can read my Next Generation focused articles right on Trek FM, and they can also stand by and listen to the new Trek FM Next Generation dedicated podcast with me, Darren, and Daniel for all things Next Generation.
Excellent. Yeah, go check out Philip's articles. They are fantastic. Some of my favorite articles that we have on the site. We're kind of a kindred spirit, I think, Philip, in our sense of humor and the way we look at Star Trek. So I really enjoy those. If you'd like to find me, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username and even on my personal website under that name at cbrianjones.com. Elsewhere on the network, you'll find me on Sundays with Matthew Rushing on Literary Treks, where we talk about Star Trek books and comics. We do a lot of TNG stuff on there as well, even some TNG comics, so go check those out. On Mondays, Matthew and I do The Orb together, where we talk about Deep Space Nine. And then on Fridays, I'm with Kate Walsh on Warp 5, where we talk about Enterprise. So check out all of those shows. Also, one more thing before we let everyone go. We'd like to ask you to please support our sponsors for this week's show. Your support of our sponsors is very important for making it possible for us to bring The Ready Room to you every week and all of our other shows, including the new TNG show. First, there's Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, online store, triple clearinghouse, whatever you want. You can do it very easily there. Go and create your own space today. I promise you're going to love it. Go to squarespace.com to get your free 14-day trial, and then use offer code TREK9 to save 10% when you sign up. And choose the annual plan and get that free custom domain registration as well. And we really thank Squarespace for their support of The Ready Room and Trek FM. Also, please visit trekfan.org. Now, this is not an ordinary Star Trek fan club. This is a place where you can come together with other fans to solve puzzles and complete real-life mission objectives, and you'll win great prizes along the way. I don't know, Philip, great prizes, maybe you could give away tribbles there.
That's true. The thing I like about Trek Fan is that, you know, just like Wesley trying to get into the Starfleet Academy, you got to pass that first test. But I think if you're a Trek fan, you'll be able to get that initial hurdle and you'll be on your way to an adventure.
But I'm pretty sure at Trek Fan, they're not going to lock you in a room and make you think that everyone around you has died.
I make no promises.
Well, go find out. Go over to trekfan.org, solve that first puzzle, and take the next step on your adventure. And we really thank TrekFan for their support of Trek FM and The Ready Room. And lastly, if you would personally like to support what we're doing here on Trek FM, you can do that as well by going to trek.fm/donate. We have 8 alien-themed badges and art prints as a thank you for your contributions. Their original illustration by Tobu Ishii, who does most of the artwork on our website. And Philip, I believe you have one of those badges yourself, don't you?
That's right. I am not only a proud Trek FM contributor, I'm also a supporter. And I have my wonderful TNG Vulcan dressed in his blue uniform. And that can be yours too if you help support our wonderful programming.
Great. And Philip, if you ever run for office again, I want to see you wearing that Vulcan badge on your suit as you go around campaigning.
It'll be right below my American flag.
Yeah, absolutely. So check these out. We have different levels of donations that you can make. Choose which one's right for you. You can mix and match badges and art prints. And your contributions make it possible for us to cover the costs of production, storage, and bandwidth that's needed to bring this programming to you every week. So visit trek.fm/donate and give us your support. We really appreciate you doing that and helping us bring Trek Talk to you every week. Well, Philip, it's time for me to wander off once again as another Ready Room has ended. I'm going to wander down to the mess hall and see if those two Klingon women are there, because they were giving me the eye. It wasn't just Riker.
All right, Chris, just make sure you take your medicine, because I know sometimes you can be lactose intolerant. But it's time to stick an unresolved Klingon daddy issue into it, because this Ready Room is done.
Recording.
Yes.
Star Trek's birthday pants.
Are you wearing your Star Trek birthday suit?
Everyone's hoping Troy's wearing her Star Trek birthday suit in the bubble bath with...
It's not a wedding.
Commander Riker. Betazoid weddings. They're all in their birthday suits. Except they call them their wedding suits.
Their wedding magazines are basically our Playboy.
It's called Empathic Bride Monthly.